I tell you, I was filling up my car the other day and the cost of petrol has gone up so much. It's gone up so much. I cannot afford it. I might have to start like getting the bus and getting the bus to work. I mean, that's like, what's that? It's £3 each way. £3 each way. I mean, yeah, I'm thinking I cannot afford that, man. I might have to start walking. And if I start walking to work, it's like a half hour walk each way. Like, I'm going to be hungry. I'm going to be hungry when I get back home. I'm going to need for his dinner. I'm going to need more food. I want to go for his dinner at the local kebab place. Like, the cost of kebabs has gone up so much. I can barely afford to get myself a kebab for his dinner and for his tea. And so then I think, I was like, I'm going to go to the supermarket. Like, and I go to the supermarket and the cost of them ready meals has gone up so much. I can barely afford to buy one of them ready meals. What to cook for myself. And I think to myself, I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know what I can do about Christmas. I mean, it makes me depressed, to be honest. It makes me feel depressed. It makes me feel down. It makes me feel like I just can't cope. I just cannot cope. I'm feeling these depression. I've honestly thought about, I've had suicidal thoughts, like, because I cannot cope with this. Just, I just don't have enough money. I just don't know where my next meal is going to come from. Like, has it occurred to you to, you know, cook from scratch? Eh? Has it occurred to you to cook from scratch? You know, cook the potatoes and meat and... I don't know what you're talking about. I cannot cook, man. But I'm not soft, like. But I'm so depressed. I don't know what to do. Even the cost of vegetables is going up. Have you been growing vegetables in your garden throughout the year as a means of saving money, like people, like your grandparents' generation would have done? My granddad did that, like, but that's different from us, like. I mean, that's like a different generation, like. I see, right. Hello, 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 and welcome to this edition of the Jolly Heretic. Now, today I would like to talk once more about the so-called cost of living crisis. Now, I've already done a video where I make it clear that it's not a cost of living crisis, it's a cost of decadence crisis. But in this one, I want to go further from more recent emotionally manipulative videos I've seen by Channel 4 News and by the BBC. I want to go further. It's more than a cost of decadence crisis. It's a cost of dysgenics crisis. It's that we have more and more people who essentially suffer from mental weakness and are not able to cope with unpleasant things happening to them, which involve them having to struggle and involve them having to actually make, you know, decisions and involve them actually having to fight for their own interests. But before we look into that, a quick word from our sponsor. Before we start, I'd just like to say a word about our sponsor, and that is Atlas VPN. Now, here's the situation, chaps. We are all truth seekers here at the Jolly Heretic Public House. We all want to know the truth about the world, and the only way we can do that is if we get lots of different perspectives, lots of alternative perspectives. And we are in a situation where we cannot get that. The internet is censored, everything is censored, and we literally cannot get the other side with regards to certain important events that are happening in the world because of the way that they censor the internet. So the only thing to do, as far as I'm concerned, is to use a VPN. And Atlas VPN is currently running a huge discount. It means you can get a 3-month subscription for just $1.83 a month, plus 3 months for free, with a 30-day money-back guarantee. And so time is running out, so it's worth looking into, really. There's lots and lots of benefits to this. Not only is that you've got that deal, but you could unlock your favourite content from all over the world, you know, shows from friends or whatever it is you like, or using Atlas VPN. You can keep your Google searches private. They make sure that your results aren't tracked and so forth. You can stop ads and malware. It's more than just a VPN. It blocks malicious links and ads and so forth, and it notifies you when someone's trying to steal your data. And you can save money online. It notifies you of the best deals, and it can protect unlimited devices. So it seems to be a jolly good idea. And as I say, they've currently got this campaign where it's just $1.83 a month. So, you know, it's worth thinking about. $1.83 a month for a 3-year subscription, plus 3 months for free with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Time is running out, so, you know, it's certainly worth looking into. So as a person that is in favour of the truth and wants as much as many different perspectives as possible and is finding these blocked by our current system, I think getting a VPN is worth doing. And as far as I can see, Atlas VPN is where it's at, chaps. Okay, so first of all then, this cost of living crisis. Now, we all know that the price of things is going up, but that's no reason for there to be a crisis because obviously there are ways of saving money. So first of all, these people that talk about there being a crisis, they put on TV all the time in the UK, the British News or whatever, they do these interviews with working class people living, let's say, in the Northeast, living where I was channeling just then, and they say they have no money and they can't afford to live. Now what we find when we look into these people is a number of interesting points which imply a very high level of decadence. First of all, they don't seem to know how to cook. So that we're so decadent that the skill to cook food, which of course everybody's parents' generation could have cooked, has not been passed on. We have had such a blasé attitude towards the future. We have so assumed that everything will be okay with our kids, and that we'll continue being really, really rich, and food will be really, really cheap forever, that we haven't passed on the skill to cook. So a lot of people who are very poor and are living on benefits or on very low incomes do not know how to cook food, with the result that they tend to live off takeaways and so forth, which are of course extremely unhealthy. Or at the very best, if they can't afford that, they use ready meals and so forth that you can get at the supermarket. And this is a very expensive way of living. They do not know how to cook from scratch. Secondly, this might be seen as incredible, but when I was a boy, I remember that my grandfather put over most of his back garden, and this was true of most people's granddads, to gardening. The front garden was for display, and it was where you had your flowers and whatever, and it looked nice. The back garden, you did gardening in. That was why people, it was assumed that even people that lived in council houses, of course they needed a garden, because, so they could do gardening. This is no longer the case. People just don't do things like this. People don't know how to grow food. Now, this is one way of saving money. It's very common. When I was in Latvia 10 years ago, you drive along in Latvia and you notice that everybody's back gardens are given over to not just gardening, but keeping animals, chickens and even sheep. And cows, as a way of saving money on the cost of food. Of course, we don't do that. The third thing is they don't save. Obviously, the sensible thing to do that you should be inculcated with is that if you live in a time of plenty, as was the early 2000s, where there's abundance and where everybody's really, really rich, you understand that there will be cycles of boom and bust in the economy. And so when you live in a time of plenty, you, of course, save and put money aside for the time of want. You don't just use all the money you have now and spend it on package holidays to Spain or package holidays to America or package holidays to the Middle East, which seems to be quite common now, Dubai. You save for the future, for a time when there's not much money. But no, of course, they don't seem to do that. They if you look at these videos, you notice little things, and the little things add up. Lights left on in rooms that you're not in. All these kinds of little things, they all add up, and they don't seem to be interested in this stuff. And the idea of having a car, I mean, you don't need a car. Unless you live right in the middle of the countryside, which these people who are on the social security or whatever, they don't seem to live in the countryside. So no, you do not need a car, but yet they of course have a car. Now, I mean, if you go back to the 1970s, it was not uncommon that children, for example, their parents, if they were very poor, couldn't afford underpants. You'd have some children that would be excused from doing PE, which was done at primary school level in your underwear, on the grounds that those children didn't have underwear, and therefore they'd be excused from doing PE because they couldn't afford underwear. And if you go back to the 20s or 30s, the average working class family, of course they didn't have things like underwear. You just tucked your shirt in. They couldn't afford things like that. So the idea that we're in some sort of serious level of poverty is nonsense. This is basically that you're used to a certain lifestyle, a certain level of decadence. And people sort of poo-poo this and say, oh, what, you're saying that they shouldn't even be allowed to have central heating? Well, hang on a minute. Within my lifetime, in the 1980s, a lot of people didn't have central heating. The coal man would come round in the morning. I remember the coal man coming round in the morning. This is a cost of decadence crisis, but it's worse than that, because the nature of the poor, the nature of those who are struggling in this cost of decadence crisis has changed such that it's not merely a cost of decadence crisis as it would have been in the 70s if we were in this situation. It's a cost of mental weakness crisis. It's a cost of dysgenics crisis. Now, we know that in terms of intelligence, we know for various reasons I've looked at in other programs, contraception, people who have high IQ are better able to use contraception, people who have low IQ are less efficient users of contraception, they're too impulsive to use it, and so therefore they have more children. And there's a 0.2 correlation, minus 0.2 correlation between intelligence and fertility. We know that in the UK, if you divide up the country between those that have where both parents are working, average IQ 100, those where one parent's on welfare, average IQ 90, those where two parents are on welfare, average IQ sort of 85, and those where both parents are on welfare and there's criminals involved from the police and social workers, basically the criminal underclass. It is what people in my grandparents' generation would have called the rough. It is only those people who have above replacement fertility. So it is those people that multiply. It is people of low IQ who multiply. We are losing on that basis because of contraception. That's one reason, but there's other reasons as well. The women who have high IQ will tend to dedicate all of their 20s and even the first half of their 30s to their careers and only have one or two children. People who have low IQ will be pregnant at 16. They'll have loads of kids by multiple men. Then they'll be grandparents by the time they're 40, and therefore they have not just more children but more generations. There's all kinds of factors that are behind this, what it means is that we are losing possibly as much as at least one IQ point per decade and possibly as much as 2.4 IQ points per decade. And we know that we've lost something like, based on reaction times getting longer, we've lost something like 15 IQ points, which is the difference between, let's say, the average person and a science teacher, or a science teacher and a science professor, or a low-level security guard and the average person, policeman, fireman, office worker or whatever, between 1880 and 2000. And we would have lost another couple of points since then. So this is a very, very significant change in the average IQ. Now, what does that mean? Well, it means that you have more and more people in the society who cannot solve problems, who live in the now, who don't think about the future. I mean, you could, in my book, At Our Wit's End, there is a list of the correlates of low IQ, who do not think about the future, who are selfish and only think of themselves, who age quickly, are prone to alcoholism and addiction, are highly conservative, so therefore they won't move about or change or you know move to a different town in pursuit of a job. Now, in the 1930s, when there was an economic crisis, you'd have people moving from Wales to Winchester just looking for work. There's nothing like that now. They just stay where they're from and are unemployed rather than make serious moves in pursuit of work. They're higher in delinquency. They're higher in illegitimacy. They're higher in impulsivity. They're higher in obesity. They're higher in sort of self-esteem. And all of the things that are positive, even things like memory or reasoning skills, or practical knowledge or social skill or whatever, they are lower in. And so the result of that is they're simply less able to cope. They're certainly not going to save money for the future. And they are less able to psychologically cope when things go wrong. The second thing is that low intelligence is part of a suite of traits which is known as a fast life history strategy. We've looked at this on the channel before. So a fast life history strategy is that you're born in an easy yet, basically an easy yet unstable environment, but an easy environment. And in an easy environment, you live fast and die young. In an easy environment, the food is all around you. It's growing on the trees. There's therefore no need to develop very high IQ. There's no need to develop pro-social traits such as conscientiousness and impulse control because they won't be rewarded. You don't have to think of the future. If anything, you must be impulsive because there are immediate dangers. There's no need to select for agreeableness and cooperation because these things, act kindly to somebody, it might not be reciprocated. So it's a waste of your energy, your bioenergetic resources. So you don't learn to be agreeable. You don't have anything to be disagreeable and selfish. And mental instability, that is to say, feeling negative feelings strongly, that's selected in favour of in the sense that if you feel anger strongly, you can destroy whatever sudden evil, horrible thing might come and attack you. And there's no selection against it. There's no selection against things like anxiety or depression or whatever. You are selected to an environment of ease. That is your evolutionary match. Now, the other extreme is a K strategy, species reaches the carrying capacity for the ecology, members start to compete with each other. How do they compete with each other? They compete with each other by being more intelligent. They compete with each other by being more conscientiousness and planful of the future and so forth. They compete with each other by being more agreeable and cooperating and turning into a highly cooperative groups. So life sort of slows down, and they invest energy away from sex and towards nurture, and to ensure that their offspring survive. How do you get better at nurturing? Higher agreeableness, higher conscientiousness, and lower mental instability. So you're a more stable person, you're less likely to become depressed, you're less likely to become anxious, you're more able to cope with adversity, because what you're living in a slow life history strategy ecology is an environment which is stable yet harsh. So stability, that militates in favour of intelligence and conscientiousness and whatever, and the harshness, that militates in favour of coping, of mental stability, of mental strength, and therefore of not getting things like depression or anxiety, because you have to be able to cope with hard things happening to you. So what it predicts low socioeconomic status is not just low IQ, but it's also, I mean, what predicts high socioeconomic status is high IQ plus what's called general factor of personality. And what that is that you are high in agreeableness, so therefore you learn from people and you cooperate with people and you move up the social hierarchy. You are high in conscientiousness, and therefore you follow the rules and you're hardworking, you're diligent, and therefore you move up the social hierarchy. And that you're low in most aspects of neuroticism. So you're not a temperamental person, you're not an angry person, you don't get depressed, you don't get anxious, you cope with life, you find coping strategies to deal with it and whatever. The only element of neuroticism which seems to be positively associated with socioeconomic status is social anxiety, because this causes you to get on with people, which is important to socioeconomic status, and some moderate level of anxiety, which motivates you to work hard and worry about the future. But that's basically the difference. So what you have with working class people what we were selected for under harsh Darwinian conditions was high intelligence. We know we were selecting for that across time. But also with general factor of personality, being pro-social. We were selecting for that across time. Now, with the collapse of these harsh Darwinian conditions because of the Industrial Revolution in 1800 or whatever, what you have is a tremendous weakening of Darwinian pressures. The child mortality was 50% in 1800, and it was 1% by now. So a huge collapse in child mortality. Now, what child mortality was doing was essentially killing it doesn't sound very nice to say it like this, but it was killing the lower classes, because child mortality was much higher among those of low socioeconomic status than high. They were being killed off every generation. Indeed, it was found that, according to wills and so forth, that the completed fertility of the richer 50% of the population in about 1600 was double that of the poorer 50% of the population. So what you had was a society of social dissent. It was bootstrapping the population. Every generation, those at the bottom would die out, and those the next layer up would move down to fill the places. And those at the top would become more intelligent and more pro-social. And then overall, over a long period of time, society becomes more intelligent and more pro-social. So, and then you get the Industrial Revolution and so forth, which means that you have better medicine, better conditions, whatever. And so you have a collapse in child mortality. And what that heavily influenced was the completed fertility of the working classes, which, of course, went up. It was them who had very high child mortality, and their completed fertility goes up. So there's more and more and more and more of them, more and more and more people like that. And we stop being a society of social dissent. And at the same time that's happening, the people at the top, who are high intelligence and high GFP, they're not passing on their genes. So they're kind of boiling off. So society is becoming less intelligent, and it is becoming less pro-social. And it's been demonstrated, that you can see it in my book, for genetic reasons. So what you're going to get then is more and more and more people at the lower end of society who, under harsh Darwinian selection pressures, or even under not even that harsh Darwinian selection pressures, and let's say in 1900, when child mortality was 10%, those people would have died as children. Because having a high mutational load, it's a general factor. We can call it a fitness factor. They things that are genetically selected for, they end up correlating together. So intelligence would have correlated with pro-social personality and all this sort of thing, and they into the K factor, and they would have been selected for. The opposite, low intelligence and R strategy, they would have been selected against. What you would get, therefore, with the collapse of Darwinian selection pressures would be a rise in low intelligence are strategists who are evolved to an environment of ease, evolved to an environment where the food is just on the trees, evolved to an environment of just live fast and die young. Now, you're going to get more and more and more people like that. And those people are going to be in the most pronounced form right at the bottom of society. And those people are going to be also high in physical illness, which I'll look at in a minute. They all intercorrelate because it's a general factor of mutation. They all these things, mental illness, physical illness, low IQ, they all genetically intercorrelate. It's called pleiotropy. So the things that are positive genetically intercorrelate and the things that are negative genetically intercorrelate. And so these people are not just low in IQ, but they are low in, they are highly in psychopathic traits, they're high in those, and they are high in mental illness. Now, what the result of that is that they simply cannot cope with this situation. They are in an evolutionary mismatch. What they are evolved to is the artificial jungle, or very stable jungle, so zoo. The artificial zoo, which is created by high civilization, in which there is an abundance of food and it's just there on the trees and you don't have to compete for it, you don't have to cope, you don't have to fight, you don't have to compete for resources. There just are resources. And that's what they're evolved to deal with. If you put them in a situation where they must compete for resources, where there aren't enough resources, where they have to fight to survive, then they can't cope with that, and they will become, and what if you're put in an evolutionary mismatch, then you tend to become maladaptive and you make maladaptive choices. So they become depressed and they become anxious, and then you have suicidal ideation, and such people would send it kind of sends them mad, and they would rather kill themselves than do the things which are necessary in order to cope with their current reduced circumstances, because they are not evolved to deal with it. They're not evolved to deal with adversity. They have mental weakness. They're not evolved to cope with serious stresses. And so, because that's just because they have manifested in an ecology where there are no serious stresses. If you go back 100 years, such people would have been born who are prone to things like depression and anxiety and whatever. They have high general mutational load, so they would also have weak immune systems. Remember, the brain is 84% of the genome. So if you've got maladaptations of the brain, i.e., depression, anxiety, that sort of thing, you're sure as damn it going to have them of the body. And so therefore, such people would have had weak immune systems, and they would have died as children of measles or scarlet fever or something like that. But they haven't died because of our innovations of industrial revolution. They haven't done that. They've lived, they've passed on their genes, and they now find themselves in a situation where life is difficult, and they're not adapted to cope with that. And so therefore they become suicidal and mentally ill. So you've got to understand that a lot of these people that at the cost of living crisis would never have existed 100 years ago. They'd be dead. They'd have died as babies. Maybe their parents would never have existed either, but certainly they wouldn't. They'd have been dead. So that's what we're seeing. We're seeing people who are not adapted to an environment of difficulty, who would be dead under any kind of environment of difficulty, suddenly having to cope with it. What's the result? They become suicidal, they become mentally ill, they can't cope. In addition, there is an environmental component to this. So society has traditionally, life has traditionally been harsh, and we have traditionally been brought up to be put on the adaptive roadmap of life, where we have been prepared for a harsh yet stable ecology via a harsh yet stable childhood, in which lots of unpleasant things are allowed to happen to us, such that we can cope with the adversities of life and the adversities of adulthood. Even little things like losing at sports races in schools, which as a person that was born 3 months early, I always did and was always last, or being bullied at school, or being left out, or not being able to afford something, or whatever it happens to be. And this allowed you, or even perhaps even corporal punishment at school. And this prepared people to cope with the adversities of life, because they came up with strategies of dealing with it. And also such people, if we go back a few generations, they would have known serious stressors, such as being hungry, such as not having enough food, food, such as some degree of mortality salience, perhaps, such as losing a parent when they were young, or losing a brother or a sister. They would have known serious stresses like this, and they would have been brought up to cope with it. This is no longer the case. Increasingly, children are brought up to be super happy individualists who, what's important is not that they're conformist members of society, but that they're happy and that they're content and whatever. And so this means they can't cope with it either. And then finally, you simply have the fact that the correlation is quite clear. In low IQ genetically crosses over not only with mental instability and things like that, but just with being physically ill. We are genetically selecting for low IQ for people that have heart problems, for people that have strokes, and for people with cancer. All these things cross over genetically with having low IQ because they are part of a general poor fitness factor. So these people are not only extremely mentally unstable and unable to cope in that way, they're also physically ill, and there is a psychological component to physical illness. So therefore, these problems exacerbate their physical illness and just make life intolerable. So what we are dealing with, it has to be understood, is not a cost of living crisis. It is a cost of decadence crisis. And also then making that even worse is essentially a cost of dysgenics crisis. And that is why things are so bad. So Merry Christmas.
Hello, hello, hello! The Jolly Heretic is an online public house which meets on Mondays and Thursdays at 7 p.m. UK time, 2 p.m. New York, in which we discuss the kind of based, fearless science which is increasingly expunged from our woke joke universities. If you would like to help the Jolly Heretic public house, and there are many ways you can do so, please, please, please become one of my patrons on Subscribestar. Also, if you want to, you can donate to the channel using Odyssey and Entropy, and you can also purchase Jolly Heretic merchandise, such as shirts and mugs. All of the links are in the description. Again, I'd be most violently grateful if you could assist the Jolly Heretic Public House, and I will see you all soon, and goodbye!